As for me, this is my covenant with them, saith Yahweh, that my spirit is upon thee, and my words which I have put in thy mouth shall not depart out of thy mouth, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, nor out of the mouth of thy seed, saith Yahweh, from henceforth and forever. And the fact that white people all over the country, even if they're Judeocards, still talk about the Bible, still talk about God, still talk about the Redeemer in Christ, proves that the Bible is true. That alone proves that the Bible is true. Okay, I just want to set some context for the start of chapter 60.
Isaiah 60. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But Yahweh shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side.
Yeah, let's stop right there a minute, right? The context of this, thy sons and thy daughters. So the nations that come to thy light must be the nations of the children of Israel in their dispersion, because it's thy sons and thy daughters. It's not separate groups of people. It's the same nations and kings that Abraham was told would come out of his loins. That darkness that shall cover the earth, that's not physical darkness, right? That's just the fact that all of the children of Israel were basically pagan, except for a small number in Judea. And the ones in Judea were living lies. They were living the lies told to them by the Pharisees and Sadducees. We leave it at that. I just want to make those comments before we got too far ahead.
The multitude of camels shall cover thee, and dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, all they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh. All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as the cloud and as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first to bring thy sons from afar, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of Yahweh thy God, and to the Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favor have I mercy on thee. End of verse 10.
That all the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered unto thee, all the multitudes of camels, Midian and Ephah, and all they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense. That's just saying that all of these other peoples that surrounded the children of Israel will ultimately respect and homage to the Israelites, that they'll give their substance to the children of Israel. That you could say that was fulfilled in Roman times, the children of Israel were in captivity at this point. They had just gone into captivity, and they were at their lowest point in their history since the Exodus, perhaps, or since the Judges period. And Yahweh is telling them that he's going to raise them basically out of the dust and make them a great people once again. So I believe this was all fulfilled. This was all fulfilled in the later Roman period, the Middle Ages. Basically, a messianic prophecy of the state of the children of Israel once their Redeemer comes and they accept Christ. That's how I see it. But we're past this point in history now. We're at a different stage in history. I don't know if y'all have any questions.
Verse 11. Therefore, thy gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut, day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the nations and kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish, yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. The glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, and the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. The sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet, and they shall call thee the city of Yahweh, the Zion of Holy One of Israel. Whereas thou hast been forsaken and hated, so that no man went through thee, I will make thee an eternal excellency, a joy of many generations. Thou shalt also suck the milk of the Gentiles, and shalt suck the breast of the kings, and thou shalt know that I, Yahweh, and thy Savior, and thy Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. For brass I will bring gold, and for iron I will bring silver, and for wood, brass, and for stones, iron. I will also make thy officers peace, and thy exactors righteousness. Violence shall no more be heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within thy borders, but thou shalt call thy walls salvation, and thy gates praise. The sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give light unto thee. But Yahweh shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy God thy glory.
User entered your channel.
The sun shall no more go down, neither shall thy moon withdraw itself, for Yahweh shall be thine everlasting light, and the days of thy mourning shall be ended. Thy people also shall be all righteous. They shall inherit the land forever. The branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. A little one shall become a thousand, and a small one a strong nation. I, Yahweh, will hasten it in his time.
So Yahweh's talking about, he begins the chapter speaking of redemption and the light that's going to come to him, and Christ is the light coming to the world. And I really believe that this chapter kind of puts his plans for the children of Israel in a nutshell, that ultimately they'll inherit the entire earth. But in the meantime, that the nations that don't serve them are going to ultimately be destroyed, and all these other things are going to happen in the meantime until we reach that final objective. The language at the end of this chapter is very much like the language in Revelation chapters 21 and 22. The city of God descended from heaven. No more sun and no more moon, because God and Christ will be the light and the glory of Israel. And we see that same exact symbology in the closing chapters of the Revelation. This forces of the Gentiles is horrible translation. First, the word for forces in Hebrew is singular. And it can mean strength or might or wealth, and it probably should have been translated as wealth here. And that's a parallelism where it's talking about thou shalt suck the milk of the nations, that all those nations that were bringing things to Israel, that were paying homage to the children of Israel that were described earlier in a chapter, well, that's what they're doing. Thou shalt suck the milk of the nations. A lot of the European countries actually did that in the Middle Ages for quite some time, especially the English, of course, but the Dutch, the Germans, the French, the Spanish went out with their colonizing ships and just took all the plunder. The English actually put all the relics of Mesopotamia and Turkey and Greece into their museum back in London. I mean, they did suck the milk of the nations, literally. So we see the final promise of God at the end of the chapter, but we're going through a lot of other things before that comes. Before that time comes. Wow, y'all gonna have some conversation.
I just want to point out the English Standard Version has wealth of the nations translated there.
Yeah, a few other versions translated as wealth also, which is a much better translation.
If a pagan was reading that text, maybe they say, oh, proof that Christianity is Jewish. Look at that. They're going to plunder the nations.
Yeah. And how does he explain the colonial period?
Yeah, but you know how these guys are, right? They can't even read a text without saying anything. I mean, if they don't even understand John 3:16, what do you think they're going to understand as Isaiah 60?
Okay, 61.
Why not?
The Spirit of Yahweh God is upon me, because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of Yahweh, that he might be glorified. And they shall build the old wastes, they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of many generations. And strangers shall stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of the alien shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers. But ye shall be named the priests of Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our God. Ye shall eat the riches of the Gentiles. In their glory shall ye boast yourselves. For your shame ye shall have double, and for confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore, in their land they shall possess the double everlasting joy shall be to them. For I, Yahweh, love judgment. I hate robbery for burnt offering, and I will direct their work in truth. I will make an everlasting covenant with them, and their seed shall be known among the Gentiles, and their offspring among the people. All that see them shall acknowledge to them that they are the seed which Yahweh hath blessed. I will greatly rejoice in Yahweh. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he hath clothed me with the garments of salvation. He hath covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with her jewels. End of verse 10.
Okay, once again, the wealth of all the other nations, all the other races, and here where it says the riches of the nations, you shall eat the riches of the nations, it's speaking to the children of Israel in captivity, and those nations that they're held captive among, that the Persians, the Assyrians, the Medes, and the Lydians, and the Ionians or the Greeks, wherever they went, they were expected by God to take all the things of the other nations. And that extends to the other races as well. Wherever we went, he promised the children of Abraham that they would possess the earth, that they would inherit the earth. Wherever our race went, we should have just taken their shit. Just kill them all and taken their shit. That's the promise of God that we have, except that we forgot who we were. And that's the word of God too. We just forgot who we were. So we didn't do this. This applies to Jews. So we're giving it all to Jews, right? This, we forgot who we were, and that's part of our punishment. But here we can see that Yahweh God promised that we would have it all. And if we'd have taken it all, or in the cases where we did take it all, we didn't do anything wrong. We should never have any white shame for that. We should be proud that we took it all. And the hell with who cares, who thinks differently. The hell with them. We should never have any shame for the colonial period or for the settling of North America or anything else that we've done. Because that's what he wants. And in the end, we're going to have it whether we want it or not. Here in Isaiah 61:1, and 61:2 in Nazareth, in Luke chapter 4, in Nazareth, Christ went in a synagogue and he stood to read. He requested to read, which was a custom, and they gave him the scroll of Isaiah, and he read in reference to himself Isaiah 61 verses 1 and 2, except that he added one line. If you read Luke, he added one line from Isaiah chapter 58 verse 6. Just one line. And that's at the very end of Luke chapter 4 verse 18, where it says to set at liberty them that are bruised. So he purposely went up the scroll and read that line before he went on to say to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. And according to Luke, where he said, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, or the acceptable year of Yahweh properly, he stopped there. He didn't read, and the day of vengeance of our God to comfort all that mourn, because in his first ministry, in his ministry here, that wasn't his purpose. He stopped short of that. He must have purposely, consciously did that. He must have. He purposely, consciously threw that line in from Isaiah 58:6, and he purposely, consciously stopped short halfway in Isaiah 61:2. And fell, stopped short of declaring that it was his appointment to execute the day of vengeance of our God, or to proclaim the day of vengeance of our God to comfort all that mourn. Because that's not what he came for. He came to turn the children of Israel to repentance. So it's always struck me the reasons why he did that, and it's pretty clear to me, but it also proves that he was serious about why he came, and that it wasn't time for that day of vengeance yet. But that's coming in his second incarnation, because he will be back, as he promised, to execute the rest of these words we see here in Isaiah.
Christ is coming back as a warrior, isn't he, Bill?
Absolutely. It has to be.
Actually, I was scrolling up and I didn't realize there's only 11 verses in this. So I'm just going to read the 11th verse.
I thought you did.
No, I just read up to the 10th. For as the earth bringeth forth her bud, and as the garden causeth the things that are sown in it to spring forth, so Yahweh God will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nations.
The chapter breaks are sometimes unfortunate because the fuller picture is drawn in the opening verses of Isaiah 62.
So there's 12 verses in 62. Should I just read up through verse 6?
Yeah, that's fine.
Were there any other comments on 61?
Their seed shall be known among the nations, and their offspring among the people. All that see them shall acknowledge them, that they are the seed which Yahweh has blessed. I mean, in the colonial period, and for most of it, in most places, I mean, sometimes there was a lot of antipathy towards whites, towards the white colonizers. A lot of the natives had hatred for them and tried to kill them and attack them every time they could. But for the most part, they were awestruck and they understood that they were going to be replaced by whites. They understood it. Until we got that disease of liberalism. Until all of a sudden we had this liberal consciousness overcome us. Nobody, I mean, in the early 1800s, nobody had any guilt about chasing all the Indians out of the land and exterminating everyone that resisted. Nobody had any bad feelings about that. Some of our best presidents earned their reputations in wars against the Indians. George Washington, Andrew Jackson, both of them.
There's also the whole thing of mercantilism that when we started to trade with foreign lands, that again it brought about the curse of Balaam.
All the time, it always does. We should just move into their lands and take their shit. We should just be in Saudi Arabia pumping all their oil, just taking it. Also, we don't owe them anything for it. They didn't put it there. It's not their oil. Now we gave it to us. We should just be taking their oil.
It's interesting because actually the oil over there doesn't really need to be refined at all. It's called like light sweet crude, and it comes out of the earth like honey. Whereas the crude oil that we get over here comes out of the earth, black.
Okay, I don't know. I really don't.
The crude oil that comes out of North Dakota, they call it sweet crude.
That's interesting.
It's pure.
But does it come out like gold? Like you can see through it, and it's gold colored.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. The crude oil that comes out of North Dakota, they call it sweet crude.
Well, before the oil prices crashed under Trump, they were actually washing oil out of the shale in Canada, weren't they?
Yeah, that's the oil sands in Canada.
Microphone activated.
They need a chemical called bitumen to do it.
Yeah, I think the price has to be a certain level before it's worth them doing that.
Yeah, and then I guess Conoco sold off the majority of the company to China.
Why not?
Yeah, so if I could mention, I mean, we've talked about this many times, but it's funny how in 61 here, you have the Gentiles as Strong's number 1471 in verse 6, right? And then it's capitalized Gentiles. And then the same Strong's User number 1471 is translated in verse 11 as nations at the very end.
Yeah.
So it's like an unbelievable how really coordinated it would be to create propaganda like that throughout the entire Bible.
That's exactly what they did. It's all propaganda.
Yeah, like it's a logistical challenge. But they did it.
Yeah, it's evil.
I'm not following you.
Okay, in verse 6, see where the word Gentile is in there?
It's Goyim, just like in verse 11.
Yeah, look up the Strong's number or the Hebrew translation, and it's the same one in verse 11 where they put in nations properly. And they do this throughout the Bible because they're creating a narrative.
Okay, 62.
Or not?
For Zion's sake, will I not hold my peace? And for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see the righteousness, and all kings thy glory. And thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of glory in the hand of Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy God. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shall thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Beulah, for Yahweh delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. For as a young man marrieth a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoiceth over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee. I have set the watchman upon thy walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace, day nor night. Ye that make Yahweh, keep not silence.
One more verse. Finish the sentence.
I love you.
Okay, and verse 7. Okay, got feedback.
Microphone activated.
7. And give him no rest till he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. End of verse 7.
So everything he said in about his righteousness and praise is for Zion's sake, as chapter 62 opens. I mean, the chapter division is artificial, right? It's all for the sake of the children of Israel. When he says for Zion's sake, he's not talking about the mountain in Jerusalem. He's talking about the children of Israel as a body. And they're called Zion very often throughout all the books of the prophets. Very much so in Isaiah and in Psalms. So the children of Israel shall be a crown of glory in the hand of Yahweh. That's a promise that we have when we follow our God and stick to his commandments and live by them. Is that we're a crown of glory in his hand, because we doing that, we give glory to him. That I shall be termed no more forsaken, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and that means my delight, and or my delight is in her more fully, and thy land Beulah, which, yeah, you know, that's actually a derivative word from Baal, but it means married. Because when you're married, your husband is your Lord. He becomes your Lord. So it's a derivative of the word for Baal, that word for married. Both Beulah and married in this verse come from the word for Baal. And of course, Lord is from Yahweh. That word that's delight is very similar to the word Hephzibah. They're cognate words. They're just a little different. And that idea of a woman being referred to at in that with that word "baal," which is to possess or to marry, as well as to own or to rule over. Well, that's demonstrated. That meaning of the term is demonstrated in the next verse, in verse 5. For as a young man marries a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee. So the sons are going to be loyal to their nation, and the nation's going to be loyal to its God. That's the promise here. And there's no room for any Gentiles in that. It's all addressing the children of Israel. And even if you want to believe that this Gentiles refers to all the races rather than just the other Adamic races,
microphone muted.
They're set in contradistinction to the children of Israel, and they will all witness this marriage between the children of Israel and God. But that doesn't mean they're going to have a part in it. They're not going to have a part in it. It's only the children of Israel that are going to be married to God. Verse 8 is another economic assurance. If we would only obey our God, the Mexicans wouldn't be in our country eating our grain. They wouldn't be here at all. We're using our guns to shoot their own kids, which I don't really have a problem with. Neither does Blusher. But the stick shot one white kid, then that's a loss.
Verse 8.
Why not?
Yahweh had sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no more give thy corn to the meat for thine enemies, and the sons of the stranger shall not drink thy wine, for the which thou hast labored. But they that have gathered it shall eat it and praise Yahweh, and they that have brought it together shall drink it in the courts of my holiness. Go through the gates, prepare ye the way of the people, cast up the highway. Gather out the stones, lift up a standard for the people. Behold, Yahweh.
Martin.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Behold, Yahweh.
Okay, I must cut it. Okay, verse 11. Behold, Yahweh hath proclaimed unto the end of the world, say ye to the daughter of Zion, behold, thy salvation cometh. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of Yahweh, and thou shalt be called, sought out a city not forsaken.
All this language is a promise of reconciliation to the children of Israel. It's not applicable to anybody else, period. But where it says end of the world, the word is eretz. It's land, right? It's not the planet, it's not the globe, it's the end of the land. The children of Israel are going to be scattered to the ends of the land. And they were throughout Central Asia and Europe and the Mediterranean basin and primarily. Even in verse 8, why should we convert the sons of the stranger when our God tells us that he will no more give our grain? Corn is grain. It's an obsolete English use of the term. In America, it came to be known only as maize, but it's basically grain, any kind of grain in England. So corn is grain and meat is food, our grain to be food. And the sons of the stranger shall not drink thy wine for which thou hast labored. That's the curses of disobedience. And that's what happened to the children of Israel when they were taken into captivity, right? That the sons of the other nations ate their grain and drank their wine.
I think the verses like those are very hard for people reading prophecy to understand constantly.
Yeah, they are. But that's because they don't understand that. Yeah, you got to understand the historical context first. You have to. That these last 26 chapters of Isaiah were written just after the children of Israel were taken into captivity, and most of Judah also. So that gives you the historical setting for this. And then there's some of the archaic language, like corn instead of grain and things like that. That's kind of a hurdle. But then there's the understanding or knowing or being familiar with the curses of disobedience and the blessings of obedience. I mean, if you read Ecclesiastes, the best that a man can hope for in this world is to enjoy the fruits of his own labor. And here we have a promise of that the sons of the stranger aren't going to drink your wine and eat your grain anymore, for which you have labored, but they that have gathered it shall eat it. That's the blessing of enjoying the fruits of your own labor. Because most of us work all our lives and somebody else enjoys it. But when you're paying 60% of your income, not just your income, right? Because none of us pay 60% of our income in taxes. But I would bet that after you add up all the taxes on every product you buy and all the hidden taxes, licensing fees, and all the other bullshit that every corporation that produces food has to pay, or to every farm that produces food has to pay the government just to sell the produce that they create, that you probably pay 50, 60% of your wages in taxes. Maybe 20 to 30% are in direct income taxes, and the rest is in sales taxes, licensing fees, increased product costs, because you're covering some companies' licensing fees and business fees and all the other bullshit they gotta pay. And the consumers pay that ultimately. So we're all paying 50%, 60% about whatever we take in taxes. And Yahweh warned Samuel to tell the children of Israel that the king would take a tenth. Well, now the king takes 5 or 6 tenths. Fucking absurd. And people don't think that they're slaves and they're all enslaved, but they think they're free, which is really absurd. That's all historical context, right? Most people just don't understand it. They think that life has always been this way, so everything's normal, because they don't know any better. Under feudalism, people gave the lord of the manor 20% of their produce. And they had 190 days off a year in feasts, in Roman Catholic feast days. And they really only had to work for the lord of the manor maybe 8-10 weeks a year, if that. Probably not even that. And the rest of the time they could work for themselves, making things to their house or whatever. Today you're lucky if you're a wage slave that you get 1 week vacation. It's incredible. So we don't know how bad it is because we're ignorant of how good it was just 200 years ago compared to today, and especially 400 and 500 years ago compared to today in merry old England. They didn't call it merry old England for shits and giggles. They called it merry old England because it was. Before the oppression started in the time of Jacob's trouble, that's where I see it, which is what we're still in.
I forget what the exact dates were again, but it's interesting. So Henry VIII brings back in the Canaanites to take care of the tax farming in the 1500s. And then shortly thereafter, they had the Black Plague, right? And then I think it was like in 1666 that they had the fire to London, right?
I think so.
Basically, all of London burned down except for the city.
That would have been in Cromwell's time.
Microphone activated.
Black Plague was 1300s, but
okay, so it was 13.
No, 1666, the Great Fire of London.
Okay, well, and weren't there a couple different like waves of the plague?
Yeah, there was bubonic plague, but I don't know if that's the same one.
Yeah, the Black Plague. I think it was earlier. I think Dave is right about that. I didn't look it up, but. Okay, so the Fire of London must have happened after the Restoration. Yeah. I think Charles II was king. Yeah. Yeah, Charles II had been king. He had been restored for about 6 years when the Fire of London happened. It was past Cromwell's time.
Okay, so they're saying that the Black Plague was the second bubonic pandemic. The first one was around the time of Justinian began. Killed 25 million people, but it took a few hundred years. And then the Black Plague was just a few decades. Anyway.
Yeah, the Black Death was 1346 to 1353, according to Wikipedia. They're estimating it killed 75 million to 200 million people. Damn.
Coincidence? Probably.
I don't know, 1300s is still kind of early.
Yeah, because the Jews were gone from England.
Yeah, 1200s. Well, maybe it was like their get back or something. I don't know. Okay, Fitzgerald states emphatically that the rhyme arose from the Great Plague, an outbreak of bubonic and pneumonic plague that affected London in the year 1665. That's where they get that one ring around the roses. Pocket full, ring around the rosy, pocket full of posies, ashes to ashes. That was 1665, yep. And then the following year, 1666, they had the fire.
It was kind of funny. They were making us sing that in first grade, but they weren't telling us why or what it meant.
It was hilarious, right? It was an inside joke.
I guess it was.
They wiped out a whole bunch of people, and then they burned the freaking city down so that they could get rid of, you know, what they had caused, and then they set up the city of London with the Bank of London, took over the currency and took over the nation.
Wow, check this out, Bill. It says that Procopius said in his work Secret History that the first bubonic plague declared that Justinian was a demon of an emperor who either created the plague himself or was being punished for his sinfulness.
Interesting. I never really read the Secret History, right? I looked it over one day. I have it. I never read it because I thought it was all just rumors and innuendo. And there was even doubts as to whether Procopius really wrote it or not. But it does have Procopius's wife. I mean, Justinian's wife. It has Justinian's wife being a real whore and constantly giving herself abortions.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I should read it one day, but I honestly never read it. I had it with me in prison and decided to do other stuff.
One last chapter?
I have it here. I mean, when you bring my Herodotus back, you can borrow the Secret History.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, Martin, we can do one more. The last three are longer, so we'll leave that.
Isaiah 63. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel and thy garments, like him that treadeth in the wine fat.
Yeah, he had those red shoes on. Okay.
I have trodden the wine press alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. And I looked, and there was none to help. And I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore mine own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the people in mine anger, and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength to the earth. I will mention the loving kindness of Yahweh and the praises of the Lord, according to all that Yahweh hath bestowed upon us, and the great goodness towards the house of Israel, which he hath bestowed on them according to his mercies, and according to the multitude of his loving kindnesses. For he said, surely they are my people, children that will not lie. So he was their Savior. In all their affliction he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity he redeemed them, and he bare them and carried them all the days of old. But they rebelled and vexed his Holy Spirit. Therefore he was turned to be their enemy, and he fought against them. Then he remembered the days of old, Moses and his people, saying, where is he that brought them up out of the sea with the shepherd of his flock? Where is he that put his Holy Spirit within him, that led them by the right hand of Moses, with his glorious arm dividing the water before them, to make himself an everlasting name, that led them through the deep as an horse in the wilderness, that they should not stumble? As a beast goeth down into the valley, the Spirit of Yahweh caused him to rest. So didst thou lead thy people to make thyself a glorious name.
Mark, you're suddenly in a rush. Okay, you're suddenly in a rush. We're way over half the chapter, right? We can stop here, if you don't mind. I don't know what you want rushes. You can read on if you want. Look at the connection between the year of my redeemed and the destruction of Edom. And this is a prophecy, so I don't really believe this is going to happen in Edom, because there ain't no more damned Edomites in Edom. All the Edomites are in New York, London. I mean, some of them are in Tel Aviv and what they call Israel today. Yeah, but there are many more Edomites spread all over the world. But this is giving us a picture that even if he has to do it alone, he's going to destroy the Edomites. Obadiah, it's Obadiah all over again. But here, it's directly the destruction of the Edomite is directly connected to the Day of Vengeance and to the year of my redeemed, that we saw the year, the acceptable year of the Lord and his vengeance at the beginning of chapter 61. This is all a common thread, and this gives us more insight into what he meant in that chapter. So these two things, the year of my redeemed and the destruction of the Edomites, are directly connected. And what we have no true redemption until all the Edomites are destroyed, because Satan will always be here to make war against us. So in verses 5 and 6, and I looked and there was none to help, and I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore, my own arm brought salvation unto me, because we can't do it. We just can't do it. We failed every time we had an opportunity to do it. We failed. Even with all the pogroms in Europe, we couldn't do it. The Jews just ran to some other king and got their mercy and bribed him. So all of the mercy of God upon the children of Israel is tied in with this same concept, that he's going to destroy all the Edomites because he has mercy for us. It'll happen. The Jews will get the Holocaust they have coming. In all their affliction, he was afflicted. When the children of God are afflicted, God himself is being afflicted. But because they rebelled, they have to be afflicted. That's like a father telling a son, it's going to hurt me more than it hurts you. When he's about to spank your ass, my dad used to tell me that. It's going to hurt me more than it hurts you. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure, right, Dad. Whatever you say. So now you know where that saying probably comes from. It probably comes right from here. I guess you can finish the chapter, Martin.
Verse 15, look down from heaven, from the habitation of thy holiness and of thy glory, where is thy zeal and thy strength, the sounding of thy bowels and of thy mercies towards me. Are they restrained? Doubtless thou art our father, though Abraham be ignorant of us and Israel acknowledge us not. Thou, O Yahweh, art our Father, our Redeemer. Thy name is from everlasting. O Yahweh, why hast thou made us to err from thy ways and hardened our heart from thy fear? Return for thy servant's sake the tribes of thine inheritance. The people of thy holiness have possessed it, but a little while our adversaries have trodden down thy sanctuary. We are thine. Thou never bearest rule over them. They were not called by thy name.
In reference to all the other peoples, all the other nations, or especially here, of the Edomites, because that's the context. And the Edomites claim to be the children of God today, but they weren't his. They weren't called by his name. Though Abraham be ignorant of us and Israel acknowledges us not, that there's a couple of prophecies that allude to this in the fact that because the children of Israel were scattered into so many other places in their captivity, but still grew to very large numbers, that they really forgot their connections to their ancient fathers. So this is describing that in a way that those fathers forget their connections to them. So in other words, Abraham would be ignorant of us. If you saw Abraham today, or Israel or Jacob wouldn't acknowledge us as his descendants because of the way we act and the things that have happened to us since we went into captivity and how we've changed. And that's what I conjecture here. In other words, we're so far from the traditions of our fathers that our fathers wouldn't recognize us. But still, we have the promises of his redemption. In spite of that, we're still the people of his holiness. In spite of that. I guess I'm the only one talking tonight. Oh, well. We'll finish Isaiah next week.
What's the plan after Isaiah?
I'm sorry, Blusher?
What are we reading after Isaiah?
Oh, we'll just keep going into Jeremiah.